Welcome to Fantasy Hockey Life, presented by Fantrax.
Here's Jack Hughes, and Hughes score! Oh, the kid did!
Your source of information and analysis to help you win your fantasy hockey league.
Barkov has a step, in on Stalock, Barkov shoots and scores!
Here's your hosts, Jesse Sevier and Victor Nuno.
Fantasy Hockey Life, we're talking Central Division. We love talking Central Division. It's one of my most favorite divisions. Victor, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great, Jesse. Looking forward to doing the rest of this division, getting some good takes. The very, very confusing and interesting division, but we definitely have some. We have our great expert, Sean, to answer our questions and hopefully clear up some of this confusion as he did with the previous episode.
Yes, absolutely. My favoriteest team, my most excited team in the National Hockey League will be brought up on this episode, and I couldn't be more excited. I'm not going to say my favorite team. I'm still a Washington Capitals fan, but the team to which I gravitate, like the Swallows of Capistrano or whatever the heck that is. Victor, tell me, are there any swallows gathering or flocking in any way in California these days? Is there any migration involved, or are you guys just at the center of paradise 12 months a year?
Yeah. I have zero knowledge of bird migration patterns. So that's, I don't know, but it is warm here. So maybe. I have no idea.
Yeah. It hits 60 outside. So if I seem slightly loopy today, it is from the fact that I wore a t-shirt outside without consequences for the first time in I don't know how many months. And a little bit giddy from it. So yeah, the dogs are loving it. I'm loving it. It's finally almost summertime in Wisconsin once again. Well, Victor, I'm happy and you're happy and we want our listeners to be happy. And one of the ways that they can do that is to come and interact with us over at the Discord. We got ourselves a Discord, right, Victor? Tell me, how's that been popping for you this week? What kind of interactions have you been having with people?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, we get some sit start decisions, some prospects to review, trade reviews. There's been some doozies in there, so that's always helpful. You know, you get our takes and of course other smart people that are into the same kind of dynasty type leagues that we are, so that's helpful. I also actually needed some advice on one of my questions that then I was able to kind of pose that to some of the people. And so that's always helpful too, a little give and take. So it's definitely a lot of great discussion going on there. So yeah, come and join us, hang out. It's fun.
Hey, look, if you don't have a group of people to bounce fantasy hockey ideas off of, this is a really cool way. We've got some very knowledgeable people in there. Trust me, I'm playing against a lot of them in the Fantasy Hockey Life Listener League. And yeah, they're pretty good. They're pretty good at fantasy hockey. Bouncing stuff off them would be beneficial. And it's a lot of fun. It's just a great group of folks in there. All are welcome. It is free. All you have to do is hit us up and we'll give you the invite and get you in there. You can do that by hitting us up on Twitter. I'm at FanHockeyLife. Victor is at VictorNuno12. And you can also send us an email at FantasyHockeyLife@gmail.com. And yeah, you could ask us questions there too. And we could take those suggestions, take your prospect suggestions, all those fun types of things. If you prefer to do that rather than getting yourself into a social media platform, I know people sometimes have opinions on which or any of those they would like to participate in. So Victor, we are excited. We got Sean, we got a little bit more conversation coming up with him after the break. Do you think I should ask him questions about bird migration or should we just leave bird migration in the intro?
I think we're done talking about birds.
Yeah, he's like in Chicago. They don't have any birds there, man. There's too much pollution. There's no way. I won't even go over with him. Okay, let's take our break. Rewire ourselves, refresh, come back, talk with Sean Filippetti. And talking the second half of the Central Division, and we're going to start this time, Sean. Well, first of all, Sean, because this is coming to the listeners in a new episode. How you doing, man? I know how you're doing because it was 2 minutes ago. But reassure the viewers that you're doing, or the listeners that you're doing well.
Well, I'll say I'm doing even better than I just was because we're still powering through this episode and looking forward to seeing what else we're going to talk about.
And I was telling Victor before, and I've been telling everybody who will listen, that the first team we're going to cover, I think, is my new favorite team to watch in the National Hockey League. I find myself gravitating to them every time. I look at the whole list of what's on NHL TV, and I'm like, I want to watch the Florida Panthers, man. The Florida Panthers are the team. Oh. Right, man?
I knew you were going to say that, and I hate that you said that as a Blackhawks fan, because we cannot find a way past them.
Well, you know, it's not that, you know, eventually they could destroy my Capitals in the playoffs or something like that. That could happen. Well, heaven willing that both teams made it that far. But they're just a fun team to watch, as far as I'm concerned. And a lot of players that I want us to talk about, just a surprising run. They actually have almost 7% chance odds to win the Stanley Cup this morning, according to Money Puck, which is just something that nobody has ever said about the Florida Panthers. I'm not sure that people said that about them when they were in the Stanley Cup Finals against the Colorado Avalanche, that they had a 7% chance of winning. You know, Florida, just a remarkable story this year, and just a whole lot of fun. But what do you think? What's your reaction to this team, aside from the fact that they've been painful an opponent for the Blackhawks?
You know, if you're an objective fan, like I pride myself on being at the best of times, you can't help but love the story that's coming out of Florida. They're a team that has not gotten a lot of love for a lot of their seasons in this league, and there's been a lot of good reason for that. But, you know, even as this season began, even as I didn't expect the Blackhawks to do well, I looked at the Florida lineup in their first few games there against the Blackhawks, and I thought, oh, these guys aren't that scary. But then the puck dropped, and we've been scared ever since. So they are certainly a team who knows how to put it all together when it matters. And some of their names who you'd expect to be doing well are doing well. But then there's just that team approach that they have. And whatever Quenneville is baking up in his kitchen is clearly working. Not to give the coach all the credit, the players deserve their part too. But they're just finding a way as a squad to put together such a remarkable season that's challenging people in their division, let alone across the league, like you said. So to say that it's not a feel-good story is just ridiculous, because seeing the Panthers of all teams having such a run is fun for the Panthers. Again, not fun for a Blackhawks fan, but good on them.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. They have a coach that you're very familiar with up there in Chicago, and there have been, you know, there's some amount of, there were already some really cool players on this team who've maybe been unlocked in the last year, but there's also some guys who've kind of snuck up on us out of nowhere, who either, you know, the team's leadership has had faith in and put in positions where they're able to excel the way they are, or something, because it's there's a lot of unexpected stuff here. But of the guys on this team, who is it who stands out? Who do you want to highlight as maybe one of your surprises?
Listen, this team is scoring at will, and their defense has been strong, but how do you not look at Chris Driedger and recognize the kind of season he's having, let alone what he's allowing the Florida Panthers to do? This guy's got far better stats than his $10 million counterpart. A 9.24 save percentage, a 2.22 goals against. These are elite numbers throughout the entire league, let alone just surpassing the number one on his team, which he should ultimately become if he keeps that up. The Panthers have relied on him for some big wins too, especially early on. He really helped build a mold and a foundation for what they were going to build from there, and clearly it's working. He's now 8-3-2 and already has a shutout, which Bobrovsky does not. So how you don't look at this squad and look straight to their back end between the pipes and give the credit there is beyond me.
I was going to pick the exact same guy, to be honest, Sean, because it's really kind of a fascinating situation. I think that the casual fan might look at this and say, oh, Sergei Bobrovsky, he's back. Maybe he's not an all-star, but he's had 8 of the last 10 Florida starts. And until recently, he won 7 of those games. It's pretty clear that Florida's a really good team behind in front of him, and that they're just going to be able to bolster him. But if you start looking into more advanced stats, it's all about Driedger. Mm-hmm. Driedger is back in the B-roll, even though he's got a 77% quality start percentage versus 53% for Bobrovsky. And I think that actually went down today, because it looks like they got shelled by the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah, and he really had an excellent game against Nashville. Although, to be fair, Nashville really was barely able to get a shot off the entire game. No truth to the rumors, so far as I understand, that when Alexander Barkov is on the ice, there actually is a physical a teeter totter under the ice that cranks and slants the ice downward toward Florida's opponent's net whenever he steps on, and it's mechanically controlled. That's just a conspiracy theory that you hear people saying. But anyway, back into the deep advanced stats. The goal saved above expected for Sergei Bobrovsky is down there in Freddie Anderson, John Gibson territory. By the way, that is like almost the absolute worst in the National Hockey League. So I'm actually going to bid big on him tonight in my big money pool with my friend Thomas. We're going to try to get a hold of Driedger before Bobrovsky loses this job. Because like you, the $10 million guy, I don't think is going to end up holding this thing down.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look that way.
Well, let me hit a few other guys, and then we can do the thing where you might be able to pick up on a couple or have some thoughts. From a fantasy perspective, I mean, we know about the Stars, and I can mention some of those, but Mackenzie Weegar is not a guy who was on my radar from a fantasy perspective, but 2 goals, 16 assists in 29 games, over 22 minutes average time on ice, 2 shots, 2 hits, and a block per game. He's out there with Ekblad all the time. That's a good place to be. You want to be with a guy who's a serious Norris contender this year. Only at 3.8% shooting, and I get, you know, a defenseman going to have low shooting percentages. That's kind of how it works to be a defenseman shooting the puck. But still, 3.8%, there could be some regression. He's only got 2 goals. So you could see that go up. And I mean, already he's well over half a point per game. When Ekblad and Weegar are on the ice, good things happen for this Florida Panthers team. 54.5 IPP is a little hot for D-man, but it's not crazy. And then we got to talk Carter Verhaeghe. We've mentioned him multiple times on this show over the course of the year. Yes, it helps that he's glued to Sasha Barkov. They're together 83% of the time at 5-on-5, which is by far the biggest for either one of them. You got your Anthony Duclairs, who've been out hurt and in and out, and Mason Marchmont, who Victor likes to taunt me with, and those sorts of things. But Carter Verhaeghe, just per se, he is above average rates for shots per 60, shots against per 60, 24 points in 31 games. But his 15.5% shooting basically matches his entire first year in Tampa Bay, or a touch below it. 12 even strength goals is 6th in the National Hockey League. Carter Verhaeghe, 6th in even strength goal. Doesn't have a single special teams point so far this year. They're not playing him on the power play. And why would you? He's kind of the strong possession guy, and you got Patrick Hornqvist. So you're probably not going to play Carter Verhaeghe out there a little bit right now, but time could come. Horny is not always the healthiest feller. So 24 points total at even strength. He's got 2 more years of $1 million before that restricted free agency comes along. So he's a financial steal for this team. I was listening to the Florida Panthers official podcast this week, and those people are so happy. They're so happy about Carter Verhaeghe. All right. So of the guys I mentioned there, Sean, who grabs your attention? Who do you want to talk about?
You know, I love that you started with Weegar, because he's been a fun guy to watch the past few seasons just from being a steady presence, and he's really elevated himself this year. He's up to over 22 minutes, I think you noted there, per night of ice time. Those are big minutes. Those are big player minutes, and he's getting them, and he's doing a lot with them. So, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who likes to only reward offense from defensemen. I am a traditionalist, where I like to see them actually doing the defensive side of the game first and foremost, and we're seeing that of him as well. Here's a guy who's already a plus 13, and he's throwing his body around with 66 hits, only 10 shy of his entire season total last year through 45 games played. So, you know, this guy's on pace for some pretty high numbers across the board, let alone the fact that he already has the most points, again, that he's ever had in his 5 years in the NHL, and there's still half a season to go. So I really like what we're seeing out of him. He's had a steady progression to his career, and it's nice. It's nice to see that. It's nice to see players put in the work and get rewarded.
Absolutely. And Alexander Barkov, as people know when they listen to the show, he's right there in the opening credits. We can't even get through the opening credits before talking Barkov. Victor, are you as excited about the Florida Panthers as I am? Can you please calm me down?
Probably not. I mean, I agree with what you said. They are so surprising and super fun to watch. And I think, you know, a lot of it has to go to the coaching staff, as you alluded to, Sean. I mean, they just seem like they couldn't quite figure it out last season. They didn't quite have all the pieces in place. It just wasn't quite working. And I was skeptical, but man, it has really worked. Everyone is just kind of jiving. I think splitting up Huberto and Barkov has been really, really great. And whoever looked at Carter Verhaeghe in Tampa and said, this guy playing under 10 minutes a night with, some okay underlying numbers, and said, this is the guy we want, and we're going to give him 17 minutes a night and pace him next to Barkov, and he's going to be part of what turns our season around. That guy, whoever that person was, deserves to keep their job or to get a raise or something, because that was impressive. And you know, I'm looking at him a lot because I actually, you know, was able to pick him up one of my leagues, and I thought I would just stream him in and then drop him. But he, you know, you can't drop a guy who's doing these kinds of things. And I'm really trying to figure out if it's just Barkov, because as you mentioned, Jesse, he definitely tilts the ice against any opponent he's playing against. But I'm starting to think that Verhaeghe is actually just really good, because when you look at with and without numbers, the team is way worse without him. When Barkov is away from him, he's actually way worse. And of course, Verhaeghe is worse without Barkov. So it's kind of confusing, but I do think that Verhaeghe is actually pretty good, and his expected goals numbers, I mean, the whole trio of Barkov, Verhaeghe, and Duclair are tops on the team. So there's no question that there's a line effect, but he's actually quite a bit higher than Barkov. So yeah, I don't know. I think that he may just be a pretty decent player. And the question I'm sure some GMs are going to have is like, do I sell high on this guy, or do I believe in him, and do I make him a core part of my fantasy team? I kind of feel like he's going to continue to provide value, even if he kind of gets separated. I don't think he's going to fall completely off the cliff. What do you think? Am I wrong about that, Sean? Or what do you think about Verhaeghe?
No, I agree with you. Verhaeghe obviously had a more limited role in Tampa last year. So getting the chances he's getting here in Florida, obviously he's making good on them. And there's no reason to doubt this kid. I mean, he's 25. He's going to be playing into the prime of his career as far as years are concerned. And there's no reason to assume he can't keep up that progress. So quite a jump from last year to this, but we have to respect the fact that he's also playing double the minutes on a nightly basis. And if for nothing else, we should expect to see him actually put in more positions to succeed with the success he's finding in only 17 minutes a night. So if they can get him into a position where he's playing 18, 19, 20 minutes and being relied upon, then there's no reason to think those numbers aren't going to skyrocket. So certainly somebody you want to look at and hang on to, because he's proving that progress is there, and it's not a fluke because he keeps doing it game in and game out.
Yeah, you gotta look at that Tampa team, man. They JT Miller, we don't really need JT Miller. He goes off to Vancouver. He's a point per game guy. Carter Verhaeghe, he's just some depth. Who cares? They let him go. Suddenly he's on the dang top line with Alexander Barkov. But man, he is so strong on the puck. They can't get it away from him when Verhaeghe gets it. He had a nice goal again today up against, I think it was McElhinney today, but a little bit of revenge on his old team against the Tampa Bay Lightning as I was watching. So, yeah, man. Just stop me. I'm just going to talk about Carter Verhaeghe all day. Go Cats.
Yeah, we got it. We got to move on. We can't be here all day. So let's move on to our next team, which is the Detroit Red Wings. And they were not expected to be good. They're not good. So not a huge surprise there. But there are some surprises just in terms of some of the guys on the team, both good and bad, I would say. So who's caught your eye, or what's caught your eye in general for the Detroit Red Wings, Sean?
Unfortunately, for any Red Wings fans who might be tuning in here, I have to say that as much as we expected them to be bad, I even didn't expect them to be this bad. That's not a shot. That's empathy, if for nothing else. But of all of those struggles that this fan base is facing, how do you not look at what Bernier has been able to do, as you know, who looked like he was going to be a perennial backup for most of his career? And despite the fact that he has an injury that we don't know much about, we have to hope he comes back from. You know, how do you not give love to a goalie battling through those struggles in Detroit, let alone the fact that he's a winning record? Jonathan Bernier has a winning record on the Detroit Red Wings at 8-6-0. I don't know how that's possible. I don't know. I didn't realize anybody on that team had a winning record. You know, let alone the fact that his save percentage of nearly 2.0 is impressive. given the amount that this team in general lets in. So no matter what happens for this team moving forward throughout this year, it's nice to see personal success for a guy like that. Call it a bounce back, call it whatever you will, but the reality is he's just having a solid year. So the fact that he's down and out right now, I know there's a little bit of mystery around that injury. It could be day-to-day, it could be week-to-week. You got to hope for his own sake. You know, he's not going to turn the season around for Detroit. Clearly, it's not going well, but you know, for finding the success he was from seemingly having lost his place around the shuffle of the league, you got to hope he can come back and show that he still has a good fit, at least in Detroit, and keep up those numbers and keep having a good year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's been so impressive. Just looking at the numbers between those two, Bernier's got one goal saved above expected, almost six above average, and he has a positive Delta Fenwick. Thomas Greiss is just really awful. I mean, almost 17 negative above expected, negative 2.6 Delta Fenwick, which is one of the worst in the league. And I remember, you know, in the preseason, we were talking, so a lot of people were really excited about Greiss and how he's going to go and be the for sure starter. And I was one of the people saying, you know, Greiss has never really been good outside of that Islander system. And I watched him in San Jose, I've watched him in other places, and I never was impressed with his game. And I knew that that system had really benefited him. So I was skeptical. I didn't think he'd be this bad. I also did not think Bernier would be this good. And anyone who scooped him up off the wire in your league is really, well, kudos to you, first of all. And also, yeah, that's been pretty great for him. And yeah, definitely exciting for him to do that. I think the guy that I wanted to highlight is Anthony Mantha. Anthony Mantha, who, you know, I think surprise, but like in a negative way, right? Because, you know, he's 26, should be in the prime of his career. We thought he broke out 72 point pace last season. You know, most of his underlying numbers were not out of range or anything, and so we thought that he'd be around, you know, 70, maybe more, 70, 75 point guy, but he's at a 40 point pace. Just nothing seems to be going right. He's been it seems like he's in a bit of the coach's doghouse, but he's just not shooting as much. He's not getting into those dangerous areas. He's got a little bit of hit on his ice time and power play time on ice. It is interesting, though, that he has by far the highest expected goals per 60 on the team. He's nearly double what Larkin is doing, and who's almost doubling what Bertuzzi is doing. So something is right there, but a lot is wrong. And I'm not sure what you've seen in the games that you've watched about Mantha, but maybe reassure me or just cut me down. What are you seeing?
I don't think I can reassure you or that fan base about anything across the board for this team, unfortunately, Mantha included. Here's a guy who, you know, had come in and saw some steady progress through his first few years in the league. And like you said, was having a pretty good year, a pretty good run last year. And he just seems to completely have fallen off as far as how effective he can be. You know, his shooting percentage is still kind of right there in line with what he's been doing throughout his career, but he's just not, obviously not taking as many chances as he needs to be, and he's not putting himself in the right position to succeed because he's just not getting the job done. I mean, as cliche as that sounds, he's supposed to be one of their top point getters. Meanwhile, they have a defenseman who's taken over the top spot across the entire team, which is problematic in and of itself in that respect. And this guy's too far down that list, even at fourth. But that speaks to the fact that only 15 points in 31 games is fourth in point totals on this team, speaks to more of how this team is doing in general. But here's a guy who should at least, you know, be in the 20s at this point, and he's just not even close. He just doesn't look like he has the same confidence he did, even on a struggling team. He just doesn't look like he's out there playing with the same bite and playing with the same finish.
Do you think the Red Wings would trade him? I mean, he's got he's 5.7 mil cap hit for three seasons after this. Certainly they thought, I'm sure he'd be part of this core moving forward, but it just doesn't seem like something's working out. And if they are a rebuilding team, maybe they could get some nice assets for him.
I think the return would have to be pretty advantageous for the Red Wings because, like you said, they're sort of assumed he was going to be part of this core. So, you know, half a season into a weird 2020-21 year, I don't know that they can use that as the end-all be-all of what to expect of Mantha moving forward. You have to assume he is likely due for a bounce back next year, so I wouldn't put too much stake in what he's failed at through half of this year. But if the return is big enough, like you said, for a rebuilding squad, you have to be able to listen to anything. So I don't know what that return would have to entail. I don't know what they think is working and what they think is not. But what Mantha's currently doing is not good enough. I would assume that we'll see a better Mantha next year with a fresh start and maybe a more normalized season to play within. Could he be on the table for Detroit? It's hard to assume that anybody isn't. I just think the return would have to make a lot of sense because I do still see him as part of this core.
Yeah, I doubt they would trade Larkin, and probably not this other guy that I want to mention, and that's Filip Hronek, who has struggled a little bit up and down this season, but he's finally getting like really big minutes and getting power play time, which I know we did our preseason with Tony Wolak, who's one of our colleagues over there at the Hockey Writers, and he said some really smart things about why he wasn't getting the opportunity on the power play, but he has been lately, and it's been going better. I mean, he's up to a 46 point pace. I was always concerned that he was just more of your all around, you know, type defenseman, and maybe wasn't going to get all the offensive opportunities, but he's definitely been coming on lately and has been really picking that up. And what have you seen in the games about Hronek, and do you think he has some pretty decent offensive upside?
Yeah, he's definitely a bright spot on this team. And again, not to keep, you know, putting them down, but there's not a lot of bright spots to look at. But he is one. He's been fun to watch, and it's been fun to see him take on a more of a role for this team. And again, he is the defenseman who's leading the entire squad in points. So when you're ahead of someone like Dylan Larkin in point totals, that says a lot. The reality is, though, as much as he's getting more power play time, I still want to see him taking more shots and having them be a little more effective with the extra man. He still doesn't have any power play goals. So all seven of his points with the extra man are assists, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But for someone of his caliber that we should be expecting to see, I want to see him putting in a couple more from the point when he has the opportunity. What I like about him too is that he has a pretty well-balanced game. I mean, he's got 31 blocks, 41 hits. So he's well-balanced across the board. When I look at defensemen, I like to look across the entire stat line, and he sort of fills in the gaps across all. Obviously, plus-minus is rough, but anybody on the Red Wings will be.
Yeah, definitely. Don't want your Red Wings. Although I do have a couple in a plus-minus league, and they haven't been so bad. It's Larkin and trying to remember the other one I have, but a couple of them have been okay. But in general, yeah, you don't want to. It looks like they're trying to win the Masters, not to not give you positive numbers. Jesse, can you give our Red Wings fans any comfort in any of your takes?
I was just sitting here daydreaming about Steve Yzerman going into that Seattle expansion draft, maybe calling into the league and say, yeah, you know, the rule where you have to protect 9 or up to 11, depending on the way you do it, from being drafted. So, like, do we have to protect that many, or could we just maybe protect like 4 guys? Because otherwise, you know, we're cool. You guys can just pretty much have whatever. I think if they were to make a trade, I would think they would actually be smart to take on multiple players from, you know, who could be kept, because they're actually going to have the spots to hold guys, and they've got roster room and sort of salary room. Maybe there's an opportunity for them ahead of the Seattle draft, because this is just kind of a bereft roster. And, you know, Lucas Raymond, I don't know. They've got a lot more to do to be able to rebuild it. So sorry, Red Wings fans. Happier days will come again. Well, happy days are coming sooner than that for us. We're going to take a break for just a minute and come back with the last two teams.
Cradling the mountains, shining like a diamond in the south. I knew I had to go there to see what it was all about. I said, Mama, let me travel to Nashville, Tennessee. When I heard the music, that was good enough for me.
Coming back with Sean Filippelli, talking next about the Nashville Predators down in Smashville, Tennessee. We like it, we love it, we want some more of it. And it's not been that kind of a year for the Predators. They're usually not very fond of the Blackhawks, but they're kind of a fun team usually, but maybe not so much this year. They're kind of looking bad, Sean. I'm going to level with you. But what do you think about this team? What kind of surprises do you see here?
Yeah, things look a little bleak for the Predators. And like you alluded to, as a Blackhawks fan, I am all for that kind of news. Not a great start. And to be honest, there's no reason to believe that things are going to end any stronger for that team. I expect them to be sort of in and around the bottom of the division throughout the rest of the way. And I'm okay with that. As far as surprises go, you have to look at a guy like Ryan Johansson and just wonder what happened. What happened there? You know, ever since he came over, there's been a regression in his play, and he's just never been the same guy, the same producer as he once was in Columbus. 9 points in 23 games so far this year is not going to cut it for the centerman. He's only accumulated 2 goals so far. Not good enough. Not sure anything would change to actually affect that, as it just sort of seems to be what to expect in terms of the trend that he's created for himself in recent years. But, you know, I have to say, as much as I don't ever feel bad for Nashville, when you look at the fact that they're going to be paying him $8 million for 4.5 more years, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, I was going to pick the exact same guy. I mean, he was a 60-point player in 5 out of 6 seasons. Remember, around the time after he came from Columbus and a little before. And then one of those 6 seasons in that stretch, he had 54 points in 79 games. So he's getting close. Last year, he had 36 points in 68 games. This year, 9 in his first 23 games. It's just ridiculous. He missed about 3 weeks in February for injuries. He had an upper body injury. He was on the COVID list for a little bit. Maybe you got to cut a guy a break coming back from the COVID list, because we don't know, kind of lingering things might be there. And I don't know that I ever figured out whether it was that he had a diagnosis or symptoms or whether he was just on the exposure list or something like that. But he went from being a 60-pointer every year, Sean, who I was dreaming would become a 70-pointer one day, to now he's like a 20-pointer. And I just want to wipe him from my memory. Jofa, the great Jofa line, Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, still happens about 2/3 of the time. Last year, that line, even though it was kind of the famous Nashville line, wasn't really happening a whole lot of the time, partly with Arvidsson's inconsistency. This time, it plays 2/3 of the time when Johansson's out there, but it's just not the same. They're just not playing. Basically, Forsberg is good on this team, and everybody else is kind of bad. I know I've been suffering through some Victor Arvidsson time, too, on at least one of my teams. So I'm with you on Johansson. Let me just throw a couple more quick hits out at you and get your takes on these players. Pekka Rinne is really, really bad. In the regular season this year, he is not doing well. Nashville is tuned to Juuse Saros. Juuse Saros has also been really bad, although I will give him that against the Florida Panthers these last couple games, he's actually played really well. Saved 47 of 48 shots yesterday when Florida was just tilting the ice toward him. And really, he stood on his head, and they lost 2-0 because Nashville couldn't even get 20 shots on goal against the Panthers. So everything's kind of bad there. We don't know whether Juuse Saros is really going to be the long term. Roman Josi has been hurt for weeks. That's kind of their guiding light when it comes to offensive production from the blue line. The team is starting to talk about they're kind of only one of the only teams that gets talked about as a seller with good pieces in the National Hockey League. All the national pundits are saying maybe Nashville needs to give up some of their defensemen and Johansson or whomever. It's not looking good there. Victor Arvidsson's gone from good, but sometimes injured, to just not being very good. Although 4% shooting on 3.3 shots per game seems like kind of an inconsistency. Maybe he'll get a few more goals as they go down the stretch. And as I said, Forsberg, 27 points in 31 games, pretty good, but not good enough to get the Predators anywhere. Any thoughts on any of those players or anybody else on this team who's catching your eye, Sean?
You know, you got to give Forsberg credit for what he's still able to be doing on a team that's depleted and not doing very well. So, no, he's not having the superstar numbers that you would hope out of someone like Forsberg. But I think with a better team around him and better circumstances, obviously we could see that elevate. So not too worried about someone like Forsberg. I think he's obviously sticking around for obvious reasons. You mentioned Arvidsson, especially from a fantasy perspective. He's somebody that I used to love having on my squad. He similar to Aho, like I mentioned earlier, would just seem to hit you in a lot of categories anytime he played. And that is just not the case anymore. So, you know, whatever has happened to Arvidsson's game obviously needs to be addressed and addressed quick, because it's not the right recipe for what the Predators need to get better at whatever they're doing. And like you said, the shooting percentage of under 4% here is, you have to hope, is not what's going to be sustained for a guy like Arvidsson. But if it is, they're in real trouble. So, you know, if he can turn his game around, then I would suspect we could see a positive correlation to what the Predators do. But, you know, time will tell, because it looks like a lost season for them right now. As far as being sellers, I would have to agree. And that does seem to be the common take. And you look at a guy like Ekholm, actually, and that name gets thrown around a lot. So can't help but wait to see where his name ends up and if he's still a Predator by the time the deadline's over and done with.
Victor, throw the catfish of your insightful observations on the ice that is this interview.
Yeah, I mean, I think as you mentioned, they need to be sellers. And I think the most interesting situation is the goaltending. Obviously, Rene has been pretty bad. Saros has been a little better lately, but he's also not been great. And, you know, their cap situation their cap situation is that they have both of them only through this season. And Rene being 38, Saros 25. There's going to be an interesting decision. They have Connor Ingram, who has been, you know, doing not great on loan right now in Sweden. But he has AHL professional experience. He's a guy who probably could come in and be a backup. They've also had Casimir Kasuo, and of course they have Askarov. So I'm wondering what you think they do, Sean. Do they, it sounds like Rene does not want to go to a contender. He does not want to leave Nashville. I don't know that Saros wants to leave, but could they trade him, maybe get some assets back, or you think they extend him? I mean, it doesn't seem like he's the super long-term solution since they drafted Askarov, but I'm a little confused as a Saros owner in some leagues. It's kind of unsure what to do. I'm sure some other people are a little confused. Do you have any insights on the goaltending?
As far as Rene goes, obviously quite a regression from what once was, but you guys have already said it. He's a 38-year-old now, so we have to sort of recognize it for what it is. And clearly Rene's time at the top of the league is likely come to an end. So that's sad to say for Predators and Predators fans, but it's just the reality of it. He had a lot of great years, and it's just a regression season for him now. As far as him not wanting to go to a contender, I'm not sure which contender would want to pick him up, to be honest. So I think we need to look at it from that perspective. As far as Saros is concerned, he might not be the long-term solution. As you mentioned, they had a pretty decent draft this recent one. But you have to assume Saros is the guy, at least for a few years here. He's shown blips of what he can do. He's shown blips of being able to calm this team down and be the presence that they need to get the job done when Rene wasn't, especially throughout the past few seasons anyway. And although his numbers aren't sparkling this year, they're not bad. 913 save percentage, 2.78 goals against for this Nashville team who's in second last in the division. Not bad considering. So you got to give some credit there and recognize that he's a 25-year-old kid. He'll have a few more years to sort of see where he can bring this team or whatever's left of it after the trade deadline and see if he can be part of a bounce back or at least be a filler for the time being.
Yeah, definitely. I almost traded Saros for next to nothing at the beginning of the season, and I'm really glad I didn't because I do still think he has a little bit of a rope left. And I agree. Like probably, some transition in the next two or three years to Askarov when he comes over to North America, that kind of thing is kind of what I would expect too. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Nashville. They definitely are way worse than I expected this season. So that'll be kind of fun. The team that I think none of us expected to be bad and is pretty much doing as expected, although I kind of thought that the Tampa Bay Lightning might be a little further ahead than your Floridas and your Carolinas. They're kind of right in the mix there. They're 4 points ahead of Florida and seven, and 5 ahead of Carolina as we record this. But, there definitely have been some surprises on the team. Not everything has gone perfectly well. Unfortunately, some fantasy managers drafted Nikita Kucherov in their first round, and that's been very disappointing. And obviously for the Lightning, they have been without him. So what has caught your eye with the Lightning?
Obviously the Lightning don't need us to be giving them any more compliments than they're obviously due and that the rest of the league likes to give them in recent years. So they should be a little more willing to spread the wealth out to the rest of us who need it. But at the same time, they've obviously earned it. So it's okay to give them praise where it's due. And one of the guys I think that needs to get some attention, although it's not that he doesn't get the attention, but I want to sort of highlight the fact that Andre Palat, he's always been a reliable presence in Tampa, but he just seems far more dangerous. I don't know how or why or what's changed at this point in his tenure, but he's just elevated to a point where he's nearly a point per game pace now. He's on pace for his best statistical season ever. He's near the top of the team in power play production. He already has four game winners in half of a season. This guy's proving to be obviously the real deal, which we all knew he was. But again, he never seemed to be the guy who was going to be at the top of this, you know, these stacked Tampa rosters. And you have to give credit where it's due, where it's not just the Hedmans and Stamkos and Points and Killorns and who are getting it done. Palat's right there, and he's getting the job done. Every time they need him to, he's right there doing it. So I got to give credit to Palat for keeping that up and having a great season.
Yeah, definitely one of the most surprising, performances. And like you said, he's never really quite done this, but, you look at his numbers too, and his luck metrics are really high. And again, we're talking about some of these guys, and it's like, okay, he should regress. Okay, he should regress. And you keep checking the stat line. He's like, nope, he just keeps scoring. So, I'm sure some people are thinking like, oh, I should sell high on this guy. And, I don't know. Like, is this really going to change for the rest of the season? I kind of don't think it will. He's getting a little bit lucky, but also Tampa's really good. There's some really not so good teams in this division. And, Kucherov they can't bring Kucherov back till the playoffs start. Like their cap isn't going to work. So he's not going to come in and ruin, at least during the regular season, the party for Palat. So I kind of feel like, yeah, this is probably just going to continue for the rest of the regular season. Don't you think?
Definitely. There's no reason to doubt him at this point. What's interesting to me is you look at things like game-winning goals. Obviously, that means he's putting himself in positions when it's the most important for this team to get the job done, and he's the one who's leading the charge for the Tampa Bay Lightning of all teams. The team that every team wants to be, and this is the guy who's getting the job done most of the time. There's no reason to believe he can't keep doing that.
Yeah, one of the guys that is a little bit surprising, I guess, is Anthony Cirelli, who... I've been saying that he's a future Selke trophy winner. I love his defensive game. I think that's been a little bit not quite as good as I would have expected this year, but he's also been playing more wing, which I'm surprised by, since he seems to be a natural center and good two-way guy. But 66-point pace for him, updated based on today's game. And he's definitely got a little bit high shooting percentage and luck metrics, but he's such a good real life player. I wonder, if you have thoughts on him, because I think that he's probably more of a 55 point guy, just a really good two-way center. And I think he's benefiting from a little bit more exposure to some of the players that are there right now, your Point and your Stamkos. But when Kucherov comes back, he's probably going to have a little bit more of a subdued scoring role anyways. But I think the world of him as a real life player, but as a fantasy asset, I would think about selling high on him, because I'm not sure that he'll quite continue to be this guy that he is right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, not to sound hypocritical, because I agree with your point too about Palat. His numbers might be off the charts, but he keeps doing it game in and game out, so why doubt it? On the flip side, Sorelli's shooting, scoring at over a 21% conversion rate. There's no way he's keeping that up. I just don't see it happening. Obviously, he's having an outstanding year, and it's okay to give credit for that, but this is not going to be a sustainable pace for him moving forward, especially when the team is healthy, as you alluded to. I think you hit it on the head. I was going to say between a 50 to 60 point pace would probably be where he'll top out. Personally, I would see him more in sort of that 45 to 50 point range, and I'd be happy with him getting that kind of production, because like you said, he's pretty well-rounded. So if he can be hitting other metrics across the board, then 45 to 50 points, I'd be okay with that.
Definitely. Jesse, what are your thoughts on the Lightning? Any guys stick out to you with electric performances?
Man, this team, it just bores us. They're just too good. So there's just some reluctance to try to pull guys out. I mean, they buried the Carter Verhaeghes of the world way down on the depth lines, and you never know about them until they go somewhere else. Andre Palat is, we've been living off him in another one of my leagues this year. He had that 5-game week this week, which really helped with the scoring totals. I think he scored again today as we're talking on Sunday. So no, the Lightning are just going to do Lightning things, and that means the rest of us will be waiting and to see if they're the one who come out of that Central Division when we get to it in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Well, that is probably the story of our eight teams in this division. But before we get out of here, Sean, why don't you tell the people what you've been up to and where they can find your work?
Certainly, I appreciate that. So you can find most of my work over at thehockeywriters.com, part of the Blackhawks team over there. And we actually have our own show, Blackhawks Banter. It is a video show that we produce weekly, and we tape them on Mondays and they drop on Tuesdays. So check out our YouTube channel, follow us on all across all social media so you never miss an episode. Keep you up to date on all things Blackhawks and make sure that we debate and discuss as much as we can along the way. Personally, you can find me on Twitter more often than not, at Mr. Always Right. Right, spelled W-R-I-T-E, because that just makes the most sense to spell it for someone like me.
Some great stuff with Sean's work over at the Hockey Writer server, but he should definitely go and check that out. Follow his YouTube show, his Facebook, watch some of that video. And thanks so much for coming on with us, Sean. It's been a great tour around this Central Division.
Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me. I was looking forward to this episode, and it was even better than I could have anticipated, just like the Blackhawks.
All right.
Great job.
That will close us out on the Central Division. We are going to make a quick whip around of all four divisions. This week, it was the Central. And over the next 3 weeks, you're going to hear us go back through all of the other divisions as well. It's going to be exciting. But Sean Filippelli, starting strong for us with this Central Division in the National Hockey League. Victor, there's a lot to follow in hockey. We don't try to get to all of it every day, but can you suggest any places that our listeners could go to try to find out the latest on many different NHL teams?
Yeah, I mean, the Hockey Writers is a good place to check out. That's where I write. That's where Sean writes. We've been doing a lot of, writing about our teams. It's mainly for us, the Blackhawks and the Sharks. And I just did an article on the midseason awards for the Sharks, and that was kind of fun checking that out. And we also putting together part of the team that writes about prospects. So putting together all the different important prospects for the 2021 draft. And that's going to be put together in a draft guide as well. That's free. So definitely check out the Hockey Writers.
Well, we are going to go full bore. I'm sure we're going to talk a ton about the 2021 NHL draft over the course of the summer. But I'll tell you right now, the more I hear about the way people are talking about this draft, the more I'm convinced that it's going to be one of the most interesting fantasy drafts ever, just because there's going to be a lot of disagreement over who's any good. And frankly, the knowledge that all of us are working with is so incomplete with all of the pandemic impacts on player development that you're going to want stuff like that Hockey Writers preview, because who knows? You might end up with the 20th pick this year and get the best player. I mean, anything could happen this year. So you have to be on guard for that. So it's a great year to read things like the stuff from our friends at the Hockey Writers, or to check out Fantalytica, our boys over there at fantalytica.tech. They all do some statistical projections, which frankly might be one of the best things we have going for us when we're trying to figure out this rookie class and who's going to be good. It goes all the way down to projecting what people would do at the NHL level when they're down in the amateur level. So it's very useful. You can subscribe to it. It does cost some money, but if you use the code FHL25, that's capital FHL followed by the number 25, you can get yourself a 25% discount, which is the biggest discount you're going to get anywhere to subscribe to that service. Those guys, Fanalytica, are friends of ours. They actually write as well at a place called Fantrax HQ, which is the content end of Fantrax. Fantrax itself, of course, you can play all your fantasy sports. And if you're in a deep dynasty league, like the kind that we talk about on this show, it's pretty much the only place you're going to be able to effectively play, because the player pools are so deep. All the options for setting up minor league systems and everything are really, you can customize about anything you want on there. It's really a great deal. So you should try that and check out the great content over there. There are fantasy hockey articles. And in addition to those Fantrax HQ articles from a bunch of our buddies here, and Victor and I occasionally will write on there as well, there are podcasts. Only the Fantasy Hockey Live podcast is the fantasy hockey content on that site. But there's a lot of them for baseball. Five Tool Podcast, Fantrax Prospect Tool Shed, the SP Streamer podcast, all of those deal with fantasy baseball, which is just a couple of weeks away. The Triple Play Fantasy Podcast has a football, a baseball, and a basketball podcast. Yes, sir, we even have basketball here, getting ready for those basketball, fantasy basketball playoffs as well. Pretty much almost on the same schedule as fantasy hockey, as it turns out this year. And then there's the SP Streamer Podcast. Yes, there is soccer, fantasy soccer on Fantrax. And that's a good place to keep up with your strategies and so forth on there. Well, you can follow Victor and myself. In addition to the Discord we talked about at the beginning of the show, check us out. Follow us on Twitter, at FanHockeyLife for me. And Victor, what's your Twitter handle?
At VictorNuno12.
So you should check in with us there. Send us DMs with questions. Why not? We'd love to interact with you. Keep getting ready for the end of this fantasy hockey season, the climax, the culmination, the playoffs. And all along, don't forget to keep living that fantasy hockey life. See you later.